I feel like if we ever had rights to music, that this episode of the Sports is Life podcast should be introduced by the Undertaker's funeral dirge, because that's how I feel right now.
I don't know what that actually sounds like, but sure.
It's basically what they play when people die. And after the week that I've had in sports-wise the last 7-10 days, this episode of the Sports is Life podcast might be the most depressing as far as I'm concerned.
Really? The most depressing out of all of them?
Probably our first topic of what it happened was. Y'all know that I'm a Braves fan, and last podcast I was, you know, putting it out there in the universe that I thought that the Braves would possibly be playing in the NLCS. Maybe not the World Series, but at least the NLCS. That did not happen. We got straight out embarrassed in the first inning of Game 5 of the NLDS against the Cardinals. What kind of irked me about that game was the fact that the Atlanta Braves decided, as an organization, they decided to get rid of some items that may or may not had anything to do with our home field advantage in a home playoff game. St. Louis Cardinals pitcher Ryan Helsley, he is apparently a Native American.
Not apparently, he is a Native American.
And he thought that the Braves tomahawk chop and the war chant was disrespectful, and they should stop doing it.
And guess what? We're Seminoles, so we don't subscribe to that.
So the Braves kowtowed to him, and he got rid of them, especially in that all-important Game 5. I'm not saying that's the reason we lost, but it definitely took a bite out of the crowd. Now, here's my thing. Number one, the whole tomahawk and the chop chant, whatever, it wasn't even really a part of the Braves organization until FSU alum Deion Sanders brought it with him when he got when he started playing for the Braves. So they didn't even start doing that until the 90s. Number two, I would hope that if you had as much ferocity about that, then maybe you should have talked to your professional football counterparts in the same geographical area, i.e. the Kansas City Chiefs, who also do the war chant and the tomahawk chop. Because if you're going to get on us about it, then maybe you need to talk about, you know, maybe you need to tell your partners across the street. Because I guarantee you, if the St. Louis Cardinals would have ended up winning the World Series and they took their little parade of and went to the Kansas City Chiefs game, I bet you Helsley would have been right in that stadium doing the freaking tomahawk chop with the rest of them.
Well, I think that him talking to the Kansas City Chiefs should have been a bigger priority than him talking to the Braves. I also think, like, organizationally, I think that you can say, you know, we respect his opinion. We hope that he still feels comfortable in our arena or in our stadium. We are happy to have a conversation about this after the season ends.
Yeah, because they first said that they weren't going to do it while he was in the game.
But here's the thing. I don't feel like that's the right answer, period. Like, fundamentally, the war chant is just a song. So, and it has no real attachment to anything from a Native American, whatever, other than it being called, I guess, the war chant. But that's not even, like, specifically something that's attached to, at least that I know of. But second of all, as an organization, I understand that it makes him uncomfortable, but A, this isn't the first time he's played the Braves. This is not the first time he's been to SunTrust Park. Like, it's not. So why didn't you say anything any other time before that? Two, what's he going to do? Not play? Like, he's going to boycott? No, he's not. I'm not saying to be insensitive to his needs or his whatever, you know. It's definitely one of those moments where you could have just made a donation to his, you know, to a charity that he believed in close to, like, his tribe and called it a day. Like, there are other ways to go about it that don't include changing your rituals during the playoffs. If you want to have a conversation about whether or not it is appropriate after the fact, fine. But during just seems like a bit much and a bit unnecessary, especially since they didn't even do it until the fifth game.
So then I had to do the one thing that I thought I would never do as a baseball fan, and that is root for the freaking Nationals.
Woot woot!
to straight up dust them in the NLCS because we now hate the St. Louis Cardinals more than we hate the Nationals. And they did that, and now I'm stuck changing the allegiances again because I'm not going to root for Nationals to win the World Series. Go Astros. So baseball-wise, that was the depressing part. Now, it wasn't all for naught because the Mystics ended up winning the title.
Yes, they did.
Go Mystics. Go Elena Deladon. Apparently, what you said last podcast with the president, or former president, but...
still the president.
Former president, heaping all this good luck on DC sports teams.
Yes. If you read the show notes from the last episode, my last line was, and in the words of a former, or tweets, former president, y'all might turn around and this DC winning champions things might become a habit. So, here's the Nets pulling it out. But, like, I'm not, like, a hardcore Nets fan by any measure. It's just kind of like, it's fun when DC wins a championship.
It might have been a podcast that we talked about preseason that the NFL was going to make pass interference calls challengeable, which I thought was a disaster waiting to happen. And there's no way that you're going to be able to really determine a judgment call via review. And sure enough, like through week 7 of the NFL season, the coaches challenging pass interference, I think they're batting less than 100. I think it's like they've only won 2 challenges out of like 30, which was easy to predict because pass interference is a judgment call. Yes, there are rules, there are things that you can't do, but in real time, it's a bang-bang play.
Yes, it is.
So I don't even know why coaches are getting, now they're getting all bent out of shape. It was like, why did we change this in the beginning? Y'all the ones that wanted it.
Hindsight is 20/20.
Everybody overreacted over what happened in the Rams Saints game last year, and now here we are. So, but I guess now we can move on to the main topic of our podcast, which is going to make me even more depressed.
So the real thing about this the podcast should be titled "How to Depress Smiley in Every Way Possible."
Well, wishful thinking only lasted for a podcast because Jalen Ramsey is no longer a part of my hometown Jacksonville Jaguars.
He is not.
Jaguars traded him to the Rams for 2 first-round picks and a 4th-round pick in a future draft.
I thought it was a first-round this year, a first-round next year, and then the 4th-round in a future draft.
Just the fact that he's gone is just...
Smiley is depressed.
I'm depressed because it didn't have to go down this way.
I think Smiley thinks it didn't have to go down this way. I think that as we continue this conversation, you will start to see that it probably was always going to go down this way.
Tom Coughlin is the reason why Jalen is no longer a member of
the Jacksonville Jaguars. And he, he joins 2 other of his former teammates as players that have moved to the Rams.
Oh, that'll be discussed later on in this podcast too. But I think everybody and their mama pretty much pointed to the fact that during the offseason, Tom Coughlin decided he wanted to talk spicy about Jalen and Telvin Smith about not being at voluntary workouts. And I put voluntary in quotes because, I mean, I haven't been alive on this earth that long, but I'm pretty sure that voluntary means you don't have to do it.
It does. But, you know, as I told Smiley yesterday, voluntary also, though, means until I have enough leverage to punish you for it.
Well, so Jalen felt disrespected about that. And then when the Jaguars played the Texans early in the season, Jalen and head coach Doug Marrone got into it on the sideline, which, I mean, let's be real, that happens more often than not between players and coaches. It's really not that big of a deal. I mean, it's happened between Tom Brady and his coach. Players blow up.
It is what it is.
Apparently Jalen got called to the principal's office after that game. I guess Coughlin really rubbed Jalen the wrong way, as he's said multiple times, as has been reported. So now we get into this whole back injury. Look, the man's back was probably injured.
We hope.
But I've come to the conclusion that, yes, maybe he did over-exaggerate that injury.
Also true.
So that he didn't have to play. I've come to that conclusion and made peace with it. So did he handle it the right way? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I feel like the fan base completely turned on him in the blink of an eye.
But I think that, again, it shows that it's the continual cycle. Fan base is a fan of the team, not the players, individual players. So if he's not helping the team, he is of no use to the fan base. Just kind of what it is.
That's true. They said he quit on his teammates, even though he had a very good relationship with his teammates. They said he quit on his coaches, even though he didn't really have a problem with his coaches.
But, I mean, ultimately, he did. Because, I mean, I do think that there were ways for Jalen to handle this better. You can still request a trade. And that week of, like, the random excuses just made it look messy. Like, one day he has the flu, then his back, then he's going home to be with his, to see the birth of his child, which that last one was fine. And any of the other ones by themselves is fine. But the fact that there were three in one week is where the problem starts.
All right. Fair enough. But now in true Jacksonville Jaguar fan form, they're taking this pettiness to an extreme level because there was a bar here in town where you could bring your old Jalen Ramsey jersey and you got a free shot and they would take your jersey and ship them to LA. And every time I look on Twitter, every time I refresh my timeline, it's another bitter Jaguar fan talking trash about, oh, Jalen's back is magically better now, blah, blah, blah. Like, let it go. Now that he's been gone, y'all can't let the man live.
No, because
I don't know, maybe it's because he was probably one of the best players on the team. Maybe that's why. I don't know.
I mean, it is because he's one of the best players on the team. So he's gonna take crap from Jacksonville for a really long time. And I think that ultimately Jalen is fine. Ultimately. He's gonna get his money from the Rams. He is gonna play for the youngest coach in the league, and he'll be fine. Jacksonville, on the other hand, I mean, they won on Sunday, so there's that.
Against the worst team in the league.
It's still a win.
I alluded to this last podcast, and me and some of my friends have gotten into it this over this past week, and it's the same thing. This city, this organization, this team, as long as they continue to run players out of town that are halfway freaking decent, we will always be mediocre. Case in point, allow me to run down the Jaguars' first round draft picks of the last 10 years.
Feel free to fast forward to this part if you are not entertained.
Don't worry, it ain't gonna take that long. 2009, Eugene Monroe, tackle from Virginia, stayed here for about 5 years, then they shipped him off. He got hurt. 2010, Tyson Alualu from California, played here for 4 years, then shipped him off to Pittsburgh. 2011, Blaine Gabbert, enough said. 2012, Justin Blackmon, enough said. Because both of them are horrible and they went up. Justin Blackmon was actually good, but he couldn't stay off the stuff.
Which they really should have known that he couldn't stay off the stuff before they drafted him.
2013, Luke Jokel, waste of space. Traded after 3 years. 2014, Blake Bortles. Nothing else needs to be said.
Y'all really do draft bad quarterbacks.
2015, Dante Fowler Jr.
Isn't he a Gator?
Was actually halfway decent, but he got into it with Jacksonville media. Next thing you know, they trade him to St. Louis.
And now he's with the Rams. He made the move out to Cali with them.
Yeah, three straight first-round draft picks. They play for Jaguars, all now play for the same team.
Yep.
It was Jalen in 16. 2017, Leonard Fournette, who's been productive, but after his little DUI last year, everybody was ready to crucify him, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's gone next year, too, because that's just what they do.
They did void all of his guarantees.
Yeah, exactly. 2018, they drafted Taven Bryan from Florida. Ain't no telling how he's going to work out. So.
Are y'all hitting on, like, lower draft picks or something?
Well, I mean, let's take a look at our lower draft picks that have succeeded. Maurice Jones-Drew, he was pretty much the second leading rusher in all of Jaguars history, and they decided that they got tired of him and traded him to Oakland.
They did do that.
Same thing happened to our all-time leading rusher, Fred Taylor, who is one of the greatest, but he was at the end of his line.
Right. I think they were both kind of at the end of their career, so they don't count as just being terrible. It's the plight of a running back.
Telvin, they didn't want to pay. I don't know what they're going to do with Telvin. I mean, granted, he's out of football right now. It's like every single time somebody wants to get paid, they get stingy and then they get rid of them, and then we have to settle for somebody's leftovers. Now, granted, Calais Campbell has been some pretty good leftovers, but that's one in a million. Now, they drafted Yannick Ngakoue a couple years ago. This man is the second best defensive player on the team right now, and his rookie contract is about to be up, and if they don't pay him, we are going to have a very large problem.
I mean, I think you already have a very large problem, but I also think that apparently they believe that they can only get people to the draft, period, and that's it. They don't believe anything else.
We've had one winning season in the last 12 years. One. And you had a generational talent, as described by a crap load of people. A generational talent, and because him and Tom Coughlin, who is apparently trying to run this organization like he is running this team the first time around when he was actually head coach.
But here's my question. Why was Tom Coughlin able to be pretty successful in New York in ways that he has not been able to be successful in Jacksonville?
I mean, was he in charge of personnel decisions in New York?
I don't know the answer to that question, actually.
I mean, he got ran out of New York because Eli Manning was on the back end of his talent, and Coughlin, or I don't know.
I mean, I think that the Eli situation is just like an impossible situation to navigate anyway, just because I just wonder what the difference is between, like, New York and Jacksonville and his ability to manage.
Well, another thing is, Jacksonville is a small market.
Yes, it is.
And it's not like you're going to get, like, all-star free agents to come here.
No. I mean, other than the fact that it's Florida and there's no state tax.
They pay Miles Jack, so I guess that's a good thing. But now we got this, you know, backup quarterback, Gardner Minshew, who...
This is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Yeah, they see him as the future. So what are you going to do with the future when you just shelled out $80 million to pay for Nick Foles for 4 years?
The $80 million for Nick Foles doesn't even make his $20 million on the salary cap. The salary cap's like $151 million, something like that. Like, it's not too much. That's why I don't understand why people are so mad about it. It's not too much. Now, if Jacksonville has no intention of spending their entire salary cap...
That is the thing.
That is a different situation. But it's really not too much overall.
Oh, well. I don't know. Maybe they got upset that he showed up to first day of training camp in a Brinks truck. I don't know, man.
I mean...
I'm still riding for Jalen, even though he plays for the Rams. I don't care.
I know.
Maybe it's because he went to Florida State.
It is.
Maybe it's because since he's been on the Jaguars, he was one of the best players we've ever had. I mean, nobody can blame me. So, all you people that hate his guts, fine, whatever. But I'm still Jalen until we die. We traded him, and we're going to miss that bit.
I think that the real problem in Jacksonville is a multi-generational workforce and how that is impacting corporate workforces everywhere, but I think we're also starting to see it kind of in sports, and specifically in teams, because Tom Coughlin is a man of a certain age. He's probably, what, a baby boomer? I think thing between Coughlin and Jalen, I think there's a philosophy thing that, from like a philosophy and draft and all of that, But I also think that, like, Coughlin has been kind of the same person, because Coughlin was the one that, like, when he was in Jacksonville the first time, talking about how if you're not 5 minutes early, you're late, and how people needed to dress, and all these foolish things that really don't actually matter a whole lot. And his rules, his first go-around in Jacksonville, there was dust-ups then, right?
I think a lot of people blamed him for how he ended up leaving, because we were good then. We were going to the playoffs every year, and all of a sudden, you know, he started mishandling the salary cap. He started mishandling the roster, and we just went to a nosedive, and they forced him out.
Yeah, and sometimes when you give people additional experience, because they just because somebody is a functional expert at the thing that they do, so just because he is an expert at being a head coach does not mean he can also be a GM and manage more elements of the process. Just because you're good does not mean you should be a manager, does not mean you should be a leader. Those are actually skills within themselves, despite what people think. But I think it's more of Coughlin versus, like, the younger players, because I'm like, Jalen's probably not even a millennial. If he is, he's a baby millennial. And I'm pretty sure that none of Jalen's behavior was something that Cam Coughlin was ever going to be okay with, based on, like, personality and his track record. And I think also kind of what I alluded to in the last segment, which was that if voluntary is only voluntary until the other side has leverage. So while Jalen always worked out, you know, in Tennessee where he's from, doesn't mean that the coaching staff liked it. They had to deal with it because there's no recourse. But when it comes to contract year, now all of a sudden there's recourse. And they can make a decision that even though it's voluntary, I can hold something over your head. And had Jalen been savvy, he would have kept himself in Jacksonville until he got that deal.
Yeah, which is what I at least hoped would have happened, like when we talked about this a couple podcasts ago. Pay him after the season. Get rid of who you need to get rid of, because I mean, let's be honest, coaches and front office staff are interchangeable, but once you get a good player, you should probably keep him for as long as possible.
Yeah.
And that includes all the headaches that they might cause, because do you want to win with a bonehead, or do you want to lose all the time with, you know, Boy Scouts?
Well, I think also the other thing is that it's not even about Boy Scouts or not Boy Scouts, because objectively speaking, Jalen didn't do anything wrong. Like, he is not a bad guy. Like, he is not one of the players that's getting busted for domestic abuse or drugs or speeding or whatever. Like, he's not getting in trouble. It's just that culturally, he's not fitting with the organization. But the real question is, how are you going to have younger players that fit with an organization that expects people to operate like they did in the 90s or the 80s? Like, how is that something where you're going to be prepared for the next generation? And I think workforces all over the country are going through this, where baby boomers, you know, there's always an article about baby boomers are like, what are millennials doing? And it's like, well, no, we just have a different perspective on work. And it's not that our perspective is bad. It's just that it's different. Because, like, we don't believe that we should have to be at the office if we're not actually doing work. Whereas, like, the older generation's like, you must be there.
They will willingly stay in office for, like, 48 hours a week.
Right. Like, you must be there 8 to 5 to prove that you're a good employee. No, I prove I'm a good employee because I do my job. Right. Or people being afraid of people working from home because they're like, but grown-ups can manage grown-up schedules. So if grown-ups are not, if they're not completing the work, there's a problem. If they are, why are we worried? Because I know, at least for me, I've worked from home for the last 5 years. I don't think I've ever had a scenario where it's like, are you doing your job? Well, you know, you just do your job. And I think that I don't have to be sitting in front of my boss for her to know that I'm doing my job. The 7 million emails I send a day probably have that covered.
So now Jalen gets to go play for Sean McVay, who is
a millennial.
Like, no more than 10 years older than him.
Right. He's the coach that, like, talked about how he's not going to be like, don't keep your cell phones out, because I know these guys are attached to them. So it's creating rules and systems that align with the people that are actually doing the job. So he's like, you know, he has cell phone breaks and, like, things like that. You're not being a bad employee because you want to look at your phone. You're being a 26-year-old, like, you know? Yeah. But and the older generation is like, oh my gosh, I remember having bosses that, like, flipped out if you, like, went on social media during the workday. And you're like, did I not get my job done?
I mean, let's be honest, I get most of my news from social media now.
Right. So it's like, did I not get my job done? Oh, I did. So why are you worried about, like, me being on social media for 10 minutes? Like, I'm confused. But it doesn't match their version of how getting your job done should work. And I think that this is probably it's going to be a larger problem with Coughlin. And I think it's been a larger problem with him throughout various points in his career. I think while he was in New York, I think that was the time where he tried to loosen up the most. And I don't know. I mean, I'm just also just generally convinced that old people get set in their ways and they don't want to change. And so I feel like Coughlin has probably entered the age of, like, I am the executive vice president of this team. I want things the way I want them. And I don't want anybody to mess with that. I want the type of player I want. I want the type of, you know, I want the type of environment, I want the type of culture that I want. And if you don't fit that, you can go. And the reality is that's a lot of workforces. That's actually most workforces. But the question is, can Jacksonville get the types of players that it needs from a talent perspective while also adhering to those standards? And I don't know if that's possible.
Ain't no telling how, we say all the time, hindsight is 20/20. Ain't no telling what's going to happen with these draft picks. But, I mean, depending on how good the Rams end up being, it ain't going to be no number 5 pick.
No. But the Jaguars might get the number 5 pick again on their own. So it'll just be an extra it'll just be an extra first round pick.
History will determine how good of a decision this should have been. And honestly, it's like, everybody's talked about this situation except the people that made the decision. Jalen's talked about it. His ex-teammates have talked about it. His former head coach has talked about it. But we haven't heard a single word from the GM or Tom Coughlin in this entire shindig, except for that statement that he put out the other day, which was nothing.
Right.
It's like, yo, are you going to admit some type of culpability with this entire bag of foolishness?
I mean, I think that ultimately, does he think it was about a bag of foolishness? Because I think the counter is, he got back 2 firsts and 4th for Jalen. And we all know draft picks are like gold. So can he say that it was well worth the trade? Getting 3 potential players for 1?
But those players that he gets are going to have to live up to Jalen's talent level.
But do they all have to live up to it, or do they collectively have to live up to it? And also, more importantly, is anybody even going to remember which draft picks they got in exchange for Jalen? Except people who are really paying attention by the time they actually draft.
They'll bring it up.
I mean, it'll be brought up, but is anybody going to really be like, hey, we're tracking how good these draft picks, you know, are?
If they're not good, they will.
Yeah. But I think also, in general, draft picks being, like, so valued, I understand the psychology behind it, because it's, like, the potential. It's kind of like, you know, in recruiting, where you're looking at a player and you're looking at their potential. So draft picks are always the most valuable before they're actually picked. But maybe a future episode should be on how overvalued draft picks are, because what you have to get back in exchange, especially for star players, is often not attainable, realistically.
I was thinking that if the Jaguars ended up firing Doug Marrone after this year, that I would be over the moon if we could snag Mike Tomlin if he's on his way out.
I mean, is Tomlin really on his way out, though?
No, because he coaches for Pittsburgh, and Pittsburgh has literally had four head coaches their entire existence.
And they're also super rational. They're not going to like be like, hey, Ben Roethlisberger went down, and we're going to fire our head coach because we aren't good enough this year. Like, they're not that organization. I do think, though, that the only reason this is allowed to go on is because of your ownership. I think if the ownership wanted something different, they'd have something different. Because I do think that, especially in sports, because, I mean, really and truly, sports teams are really just small businesses. They typically have around 200 employees, and they're really just kind of pet projects for billionaire owners that got rich doing something else.
Well, our owner did want to pay him. Our owner didn't want him to leave.
Why weren't the owner's wishes, you know what I mean? Like, why weren't they the ones that were honored?
Apparently, after the owner had a heart-to-heart with Jalen, he went in the media and told everybody that he expects Jalen to play against New Orleans, and then he didn't. And I guess when he didn't, that was like the last straw for organization. Like, okay, fine. If he's going to play it this way, then we just go ahead and get rid of him. So, look, there's blame to go all around, okay? Jalen did some messed up stuff. The team definitely did some messed up stuff. Coughlin did some messed up stuff. And he ain't going to admit to it, but whatever. And fans need to just look. The fans are like trying to blame it all on, they're trying to pin this all on Jalen, the diehard fans. I'm like, that is unfair. I mean, yeah, he probably acted a little childish on his way out, but it could have been avoided.
It could have been. So, but I think that it also couldn't have been because it's been building all season. And maybe ultimately the people in charge didn't want an outspoken millennial on their team.
I'm still depressed.
I know. It's okay.
Well, the NBA began its 74th campaign tonight, and it is starting without its new star, Zion Williamson, who is going to be out for a month and a half. And I'm guessing, obviously, New Orleans isn't that happy about that, but I'm sure the entire league is not happy about that because they've been basically building Zion up for the last 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a lot.
I think that Zion's longevity is going to have to depend on him pacing himself and not going full force like all the time, because he is a very robust individual.
Yes, he is.
But I mean, he runs a little awkward, and I can see where. Hopefully this doesn't happen. Hopefully he doesn't have these lingering injuries that happen that curtail his entire career, a la Greg Oden. But this is definitely not a good start.
No, it's not.
Your boys play tonight. See who wins the first round of King of LA.
It's gonna be foolishness. I just feel like they play in the same building. The Lakers, the Clippers. I don't even know.
Yeah, the NBA is definitely going to have its fair share of
storylines. They're not even done at this point with China yet. So there's still more fallout coming from that. So basically the NBA is just – the NBA is still the most interesting league because you never know what team people are going to be on. And they at least try to handle things the right way. Even if they end up in a geopolitical mess that they never thought that they would step in.
they're not shy about approaching any problem.
No, they're not. And
they don't run away from it.
They don't. And I think that ultimately, I appreciate that more than anything else, because you're going to have problems in business. Like, it just is what it is. But they definitely don't, like, try to just follow whatever popular public sentiment is. They try to actually like work their way through their problems.
I give Russell Westbrook and James Harden 5 games before they get caught on camera yelling at each other, arguing about who's going to take the last shot or when one of them, like, messes up.
Yeah.
Five games.
I agree.
I wonder how Kyrie is going to do this entire season without KD.
I don't know how Kyrie and KD are going to do when they end up playing together. Like, I still think this is a match made in nobody's basketball heaven. Like, I just... I cannot believe... I mean, maybe Kyrie... But here's the thing. Kyrie is closer to being Steph, not, like, basketball-wise, but, like, upbringing-wise, like, nuclear family... Or not his nuclear family, but regardless, dad was super involved. Like, all the things, like, grew up in a relatively, like, decent... You know what I mean? Didn't grow up anywhere near the level of, like, poverty that KD grew up in. I just don't know how this is going to work. But KD doesn't, or but Kyrie doesn't have nearly the like basketball IQ as Steph does. So it's going to be really interesting. Also, there's no reports that Klay is going to miss the entire season, which I was like,
he was going to miss the entire season to begin with.
That's what I'm like. I'm like, is this a report? Is this breaking news? What? Stop it. I mean, people do like rush back, but that only seems to be in football. Klay Thompson signed a guaranteed contract. He only had to come back a minute before he's ready. Oh, did you see that Michael Jordan said that Steph Curry is not a Hall of Famer?
Michael, stay bitter. Like, what is his problem?
Like, I was like, well, Magic Johnson said, he tweeted that.
Oh, I saw that.
He's like, guys, chill. If he says too much, he'll get fined. He's accurate about that, but I don't think that anybody thinks that the Hornets are trying to tamper by trying to like talk about Steph. Like that, no, they're not.
I don't know what Michael deal is. That man always just takes stuff personal.
But also, like the Basketball Hall of Fame is actually the easiest of the Hall of Fames to get into.
Yeah.
So. Steph doesn't even have to do that much and he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Steph would have been in the Hall of Fame after the first championship.
He's already about to close in on the freaking most threes made in NBA history.
Yeah, I mean, his dad, he's the only unanimous MVP winner. Like, he has three championships. There's no requirement to say you're going to make it to the Hall of Fame because you were finals MVP. It's not a requirement. Because Barkley and several other people are in the Hall of Fame and they never even won one. Stop it. Like, I don't understand. I guess my problem with it is I don't understand his logic. Because, again, it is literally the easiest of all of the Hall of Fames to get into.
I understand his logic is him, is Michael being Michael. He's just forever bitter. You understand? We keep harping back on this. The dude that got picked over him for his high school basketball team, he brought him to his Hall of Fame induction. That dude had, that wasn't even his decision. It was the coach's decision. But he brought that man to his Hall of Fame ceremony.
I cannot. I just.
Michael is forever bitter.
Which is crazy because he's bitter and he's still considered the greatest of all times. Like, how are you bitter and the greatest? Like, I don't understand how that works. Like, in your brain, how does that work? Because I don't get it.
He probably not even going to go watch Space Jam 2.
Probably not. But then again, Space Jam 2 has the opportunity to be terrible. Like, let's be really, really honest. Opportunity.
I think it's going to be a foregone conclusion.
Like, I don't really understand why Bron decided he would want to redo this movie because, or do a sequel to this. Like,
I think he just wanted to give something to this generation.
But, like, you could have come up. You could have picked literally anything else. Like, I mean, in general, the recap, the redos, the sequels, all of them are useless anyway right now. Like, there's just so many. Let's redo this. Let's redo that. Let's remake this.
You're redoing a movie that was made by the person that you will forever be compared to.
Right. Stop it. Like, I just can't. Like, I really just can't.
Anyway, before we hang up, this Catholic high school in St. Louis, I don't know if anybody heard, their football coach tried to pull a fast one. This team apparently played in the state championship last year, and one of their players, I guess, acted out in that game and got thrown out and then got suspended for the first game of this season. Well, the head coach of Cardinal Ritter High School the coach apparently thought it would be sweet to put this kid in another jersey number, portray him as a freshman, and try him out on the field the first game of the season. Still doing the things that he did last year, like doing the pregame ritual with his teammates, or like being not a freshman. I assume he played well that first game. And then this doofus made some social media posts where like they had pictures of this kid and people were able to identify that he had the same tattoos. Didn't cover him up. The only thing that changed was this kid's number. And everybody, I don't know how obvious it was, but anyway, the school found out and they reported it to the Missouri Athletic Association. And the team basically forfeited the rest of their games for the entire year. The entire coaching staff is gone.
Was this worth it for one game?
I don't know. But the kid who was only suspended one game is now suspended 8 more. And all the coach, like, my thing is, a former coach is, like, playing this stuff off like it's no big deal. Like, it was just, you know, a little small mistake. You know, we're not going to let that mistake define our... This mistake is going to be written all over your program. You cheated in broad daylight. It got caught. And now it's no big deal. Get the hell out of here.
And it's also, like, an unnecessary cheating. Like, it's one game. I get that they're, like... ranked nationally in the small school division. I understand that. But, like, you could have... It's one game. If you can't even, like, win with one player being out, one game, then your team is entirely too dependent on that one player. And again, oh, you lose one game that season. It shouldn't be the end of whether or not you're going to be able to make it to the playoffs.
And it's like, what is that teaching your kids?
Nothing. How to cheat. But, like, I get... You know what it sings? Like, I tend to have a pet peeve with cheating that is unnecessary. And yes. This kind of falls into that category. If... I don't know what... Like, I don't know what cheating I think is okay, particularly. But, like, just that, like, you really aren't gaining a whole lot from this type of cheating feels like... The risk doesn't outweigh the benefits. And that is 100% how I feel about this.
I mean, you don't see Florida State, you know, coming out here trying to put Jameis Winston back in a number 15 jersey, which, before we hang up...
would actually would be hilarious.
We need to do something.
No, we just gotta be patient. That's all we can be at this point.
Talking about the last depressing piece of this podcast.
Right?
So we ain't got no choice. Yeah, we ain't got no choice but to be patient because of all the things that we've talked about in the last month.
Right. So apparently the latest people to like the rumors of who is going to potentially replace Willie Taggart when he is fired and his $17 million buyout is paid are Urban Meyer and Brian Kelly. Urban Meyer, the former head coach of the University of Florida, and Brian Kelly, a coach with a team that's number 8 in the country, apparently they're going to come to FSU if we... I can't with people.
Look, Brian Kelly, I wouldn't even be that upset, but...
he's not going to leave Notre Dame, though, willingly.
It's not going to happen. Yeah. But Urban Meyer over my dead body. Kiss my behind. No.
Before he taped, FSU's AD released a statement. And his statement, his quote, and I quote, if, parentheses, Taggart were hit by a bus tomorrow, we would not target Coach Meyer, period. I say this with all due respect to Coach Meyer, but we would not target Steve Spurrier either. You do not, under any circumstances, hire the coach of your biggest rival.
Look, the fact that he coached to Florida isn't even the reason why I think over my dead body. It's the fact that he has allowed so much stuff to go on while he's been the coach.
Oh my gosh.
It's not just at Florida, but at Ohio State too. And the fact that once he started losing, that
he always runs away.
I got a heart attack. I got heart problems. I'm gonna have to leave. Get the hell out of here. No.
Honestly, like, I still want, ESPN needs to do a 30 for 30 on the Urban Meyer years, because all of the Florida fans need to stop talking about other programs and what problems they have or didn't have or where they might have gotten in trouble, because Florida was literally beyond terrible as people, as it was such a do anything you want scenario in Florida. Huh.
Yeah. I'd rather rehire Bobby Bowden as an 87-year-old.
Right.
Then
like, nah. And we can even, yeah, like I said, we can go beyond just the fact that he was Florida, but like, it's just, Urban Meyer is just not, he's a slimy person. Let's just put it that way.
But here it is. We're going to say it one more time. No Nation going to have to be patient.
Really?
And
that's it.
Right now, it's because we ain't got no other choice.
And also, like, No Nation needs to be patient, and we've got no other choice. But A, there's obvious progress. Last year, we got blown out by everybody. This year, at least we're in games into the fourth quarter, and often winning in the fourth quarter and then haven't figured out how to close. But also, like, every time we see something wrong, like, this team, like, there just is not the talent on this team. There are lots of players that have scholarships at Florida State that would not have gotten a walk-on spot at Florida State during any point of its heyday. So,
and guess what? As the season has gone on, the talent that we have had
got
are now injured for the rest of the season.
We have a lot of injuries. So right now we're in a scenario where every little thing is scrutinized, but more importantly, we have no margin of error. Seminoles teams of the 90s were some of the most penalized teams on the planet. But guess what? It didn't matter because they were that good. This team is not that good. They can't afford errors, but guess what? Errors are going to happen because they're 18, 19-year-old, 20-year-old kids, and their natural talent cannot supersede anything. So,
on that note, I hope that I'm in a better mood 2 weeks from now. In a way, this podcast was therapeutic.
I'm glad.
I was able to get out all my bad feelings about the Braves, all my bad feelings about Jalen and the Jaguars, all my bad feelings about FSU. It was just, Courtney was my Dr. Phil for,
yes,
this episode.
Glad to be of service.
On that note, go Astros.
Nah, son.
No, screw that. Go Astros.
You know, I still call them the Nationals because of the time that they literally embroidered spelling their name wrong on their jersey. I still call them that to this day.
Go Astros.
Go Nats.